Hi everyone, and welcome to another podcast of Bring a Bottle. This week I will be focusing on the true crime side of this podcast, surprise, surprise, and I will be focusing on the Gonzalez family. That's who I will be talking about. This case is literally insane. Like, I could not believe that this was all over inheritance and money, pettiness, like stupidity. It was gobsmacking. When I read it, I was like, this is the most stupid thing I've ever seen. But it was so intriguing and so weird. So sit back with your bottle, relax, and listen. Pay close attention to details, because by the end, you should know who the killer is. Let's just start with a little bit of backstory. So the father in this case, his name was Teodoro Gonzalez. He was born in 1954, and his nickname was Teddy. He worked extremely hard in school. He went to law school over in the Philippines. And when he was there, he met another girl named Mary. She was 18 years old when he was 23. She was the eldest of six, and within a few months, they were married. And in 1980, they gave birth to their first son, Seth Gonzalez. In 1983, they gave birth to a girl named Claudine. So this family, their parents, they always wanted to give their children a stable financial home, as they never had that growing up. They grew up in large families. They never had the stableness that they wished upon their children. So they made it their decision to put in all the effort they could. Over the Philippines, they owned video store, a property development place, all while he was finishing his law degree. And they also owned a pharmacy. In 1989, they opened up a hotel, Queen Victoria Hotel, which the entire family was living in. The next year, in 1990, the hotel collapsed in a horrible earthquake. Teddy was actually stuck underneath all the rubble, and Seth was able to save him and was classified a massive hero. After this whole situation, they moved to New South Wales. This is where Teddy finished his law degree as an Australian and opened up his own law firm in their family name. It was very successful, and they ended up buying a block of land and built a very large, beautiful home on Collins Street, North Ryde. The parents were so strict. They had very high expectations of their children because they did not want them growing up as they had when they were kids. The children had everything paid for. They got everything that they wanted. It was insane. But the issue was, Seth wasn't good at school at all. He loved music and he loved singing and he always wanted to be a part of a band. His parents were not happy about that. It made him quit singing and study either law or medicine. So he ended up doing so and studied medical science at UNSW. He wasn't doing so well because all he wanted to do was focus on music. He was part of a band named Definite Vibes. They were actually very big. They were performing in nightclubs. They were performing at parties. They were well known, and they had quite a following. Seth even had a fan page made for him by this girl named Daisy Diaz. She created a page and was posting many photos of him, saying how obsessed she was with him, how she was in love with him, wanted to marry him, would literally die for him, the whole works. Stay tuned, because at the end, there is the most intriguing thing about this fan page you would literally love. So he had dropped to medical science and went to Macquarie University to study law because his parents found out that he was failing. And they thought that he was doing a lot better with his grades. So his father hired him to work in a law firm and bought him his own car with personalized number plates. Their daughter, Claudine, was actually doing really well in school. She was very good, but she was dating a 19-year-old, and her parents were not happy about it at all, as they were very strict, did not want any dating, nothing. So they were so worried she would fail at school, they actually shipped her off to Melbourne to study with her auntie and go to school there to separate the relationship. She managed to keep a long-distance relationship with her boyfriend until Seth sent him a threatening email telling him to fuck off because Seth was part of a gang. It was obviously scary for the boyfriend, and he dumped Seth's sister. And Claudine was not happy about it at all. And the realization that it was her brother, she was even more mad and told her parents her brother's biggest secrets, that he was dating a girl that was 4 years older than him and he was not doing amazing at uni at all. He was faking his reports because he was failing all his classes and saying that he was acing them in these fake reports to give to his parents so they'd keep buying him stuff. His parents were not happy about this at all. And they mainly just said that he has to get rid of anything to do with singing and music. And if he didn't dump this girlfriend, he was going to get his car taken off him, disinherited, everything. So Seth decided to break it off with his girlfriend. But in his mind, he thought that they were going to get back together straight away, when in fact, she literally did not give a crap about him at all. She could not have given two fucks. She got back with her ex about a week later, and Seth was destroyed. He thought they were going to marry each other. He was obsessed with her, would not leave her alone afterwards, and it became this whole situation. So, yeah, now we are caught up to the day of the murders, 10th of July, 2001. So this day was just normal, like any other day for this family. Claudine was at home studying because she started school in 2 days and had to go back to Melbourne. Seth went to university in the morning and the mum and dad went to work in separate cars in the morning. Just a regular, normal day. After Seth finished university, he went to a law firm to help his father with some IT issues. He had plans to meet his friend that night at 8 p.m. and they went into the city. They had dinner at Planet Hollywood and then went to the Galaxy World Arcade. They left the city at around 11 and Seth dropped Sam home and got home at around 11:30, 11:45. When he walked inside to discover his entire family murdered. Could you imagine walking inside your home and just seeing your entire family murdered on the floor? What the hell would you do? Honest to God. So Seth ran outside, called 000 at 11:48, and told them his parents had been shot. He said to the lady or the man on the phone, "Someone has shot my parents. They aren't breathing. They are on the floor and I can't find my sister. There is blood everywhere." He ran to his neighbor's house. His neighbor's name was John and he was screaming and yelling to try and wake him up. John eventually woke up because of all this noise and so did another neighbor named Shane. They both saw Seth sobbing hysterically. Seth said, "John, please help me. Look what's happened to my family." And Seth took John inside the house. John ran back to his house and called the police straight away whilst Shane stayed with Seth to comfort him. Seth, all of a sudden, whilst Shane was comforting him, jumped up and said, "I know CPR," and ran back inside the house. But it was way too late. The parents were already long gone. So they sat out the front and Shane was worried that the killer could still be in the house. So he called 000 and stayed on the phone with them until they got to the house. 46-year-old Teddy was lying on the floor in the foyer of the house with a pool of blood around him, and 43-year-old Mary was in the lounge room with a pool of blood around her. She had been carrying groceries, and they were everywhere, all over the floor around her, because she was obviously carrying them when the attacker attacked her. On arrival of the police, they were all armed, and they went inside to ensure that it was all safe, and the killer was not still there. When they went upstairs, they had found 18-year-old Claudine lying in the fetal position in her room with blood all around her. The killer put a red jumper over her to hide the brutal attack that he had made on her. Literally put a red jumper on her. It makes no sense. I don't know why he would do that, but he did, or she did, whoever it was. Oops, I think you gave away clue. So, in fact, all the victims were not shot. They were brutally stabbed. Teddy had been stabbed 12 times, mainly to his upper body. His heart and lungs had been stabbed. His spine had been severed and his carotid arteries slashed. Wounds found all over his arms and hands were proving that he had fought his attacker. Mary had injuries to her face, her back, chest, abdomen, and groin. She had also had the same defensive wounds as her husband. The killer had also slashed her throat. But due to the lack of blood that came out, it decided that it was post-death. It was probably all after death. Claudine's murder was actually the worst. It was the most brutal. She was hit with a heavy object believed to be a baseball bat. Her skull was fractured. There were dents in the roofs and the walls, which was how they decided it was a baseball bat. She was also strangled and stabbed 5 times, 3 to her neck and 2 to her torso. Her time of death was around 4 p.m. Mary left work at 4:50 and dropped off her friend, then must have gone to get some groceries, and as soon as she got home, she was murdered by the killer. Teddy left work at 6:30, and he was killed as soon as he walked in the front door. The killer also left racist graffiti in blue spray paint in the lounge room. Seth was outside while officers were in his house, and he was crying, and he requested rosary beads and sat there and prayed. He said to the police that he had saw 2 people fleeing south when he arrived home, and he tried to chase them, but he was unable to reach them. The police asked if there was somebody who would want to hurt his family or any incidents that had occurred recently, which would have led to his family's death. In his response, he said that they were coming home from Claudine's 18th birthday the night before, and they got in a road rage incident, and the driver yelled to his father, "You bloody Asians." The police had believed from the evidence that it was a racially motivated crime. There was also indications of robber in the house. Mary's handbag and Teddy's briefcase had all been gone through, and the stuff inside was actually scattered all around them. The wardrobes had all been left open, and Mary's 5 or 6 dogs were retrieved in a room unharmed. So the police believed the house was staged to look like a robbery. It wasn't actually a robbery. As there was nothing in value checked in the house, the money in the wallets was still there, and the blood around the bodies indicated the stuff around them was placed there, because none of them were covered in blood, the blood wasn't moved, nothing. There was a windscreen above the sink that was also removed and slashed, and then it was thrown outside. But there was no footprints around the counter, the window, and the time of the murders indicated that it could not have been a break-in, which led to murder, as the killer had waited hours for each family member to get home. So there was also fresh water on the bathroom tiles, which was there after the murders took place. So this killer took a shower in the murder's home after cleaned up a lot of them in their own showers. He also used knives from their knife block at the house. So it was weird for a killer to be so unprepared if it was a hate crime. So there was no signs of a break-in that weren't staged. So police thought that they were looking for somebody who knew the family. The blood stains on the shoe prints outside weren't from any individual that had come to the house after the murder. So it wasn't from Seth, wasn't from Shane, wasn't from any of the cops, the ambulance, people, no one, not from John, nothing. So they were looking for a shoe print that was a size 7 UK from the brand Running Lace. On the 11th of July, Seth was brought into the station to give an official report. He said he went to uni in the morning, then went to the Wilson to help with IT. He left at 4 p.m. to meet his friend Sam at 5, but Sam changed the plans to 8 p.m. He then decided to go home from the law firm. He tried to call his home phone and he got home at 6 p.m. The lights were off and everything was quiet. It was raining, so he waited inside the car for the rain to calm down before he went inside. Eventually, he decided not to go inside and go see his friend's new house in Kingsford, 30 minutes away. But here's the weird part. He didn't have his friend's number or know the address. So he literally just drove around looking for this house in Kingsford. Let's just take a moment. He literally just drove around Kingsford looking for a house that he didn't even know was the address, didn't know what house it was. So in my mind, that's fucked. So then he left. So he got to Sam's house at 8:15 and then they went into the city. He dropped him home at 11:30, 11:45. He got to his house and found the bodies. By the 13th of July, media had found out and they went insane. Seth held this press conference with a $100,000 reward for any information on his family's death, spoke about how much he really loved them, how much they meant to him, everything. Then all of a sudden, all these rumors started about business shady ties to a gang, hate crime, all these rumors about the family that could have been the reason why they got murdered. All these stories just got made up and devoured. So the same day as the media conference, Seth went to his family's accountant, his father's accountant, sorry, trying to get all of his inheritance, which was over $3 million. But of course he didn't get it. But it was just kind of sus to police and sus to everyone that he went to his father's accountant like 3 days after the murder, asking for all his inheritance. He didn't care about the murders. He just wanted the inheritance. The funeral was held on the 27th of July, and there was many people there, family, friends, people from uni, people from work. The police were there that were like looking after the case, like everyone. There was heaps of people. So Seth spoke about how much he missed his family, things that were taken away from him, things he missed out. But the weird fact was, after he said all of this, he stood up there and just started singing. Randomly just started singing in the middle of the funeral. Like, it was random. Like, I watched the video. It was literally complete. Like, just started blurting out some lyrics and singing. So by the end of that, and as a couple of days went past, police still couldn't find a cause and actually finally looked into Seth. There were so many holes in his alibi that he kept trying to call his phone, was engaged on his friend Sam's phone. The hours of the murders were between 4 and 7 p.m., and Seth could not be accounted for as he was looking for his friend's house, whom he didn't have the number of. So one of the co-workers of his father stopped by the house at 4:30, which is the time of Claudine's murder, and said Seth's car was outside when he was dropping off the documents into the letterbox. His auntie also dropped by at 6 p.m. on her way home to see her sister. Everything was quiet, but Seth's car was still there. And Seth stated it was raining, so he stayed in the car and left straight after, but he wasn't in the car and it wasn't raining when she got there. She stood at the door for 5 minutes, ringing on the doorbell, and nobody answered. So she looked inside and saw a figure wearing a jacket and a cap on. But her son just told her, "You're probably seeing things. It's probably like a coat rack, something like, everything's quiet. I don't think anybody's home. Let's just go." So they left. So on the day of the death, despite the full-on hysterics, there was actually no tears that came out of Seth's eyes. He put on this whole show, but there was not one wet tear that dripped from his eye. At all. So he was so worried about the police investigating his room and maybe finding a porn video. So he said to the police, "I'm so worried there's a porn video in my room. I don't want them going through my room." Are you serious? Like, you've got to be kidding. They're looking for your sister, they're looking for your dead family, and all you care about is a porn video in your room. He stated he had given them CPR, but he barely had any blood on his clothes. There was nothing on him about, like, three patches of blood, like, on his, like, wrist and pants. Like, there was, like, three droplets. He had nothing on him, but the bodies were covered in blood. If he had even gone near them, he would have been drenched. So his excuse to this was that the rain outside washed it off, and that he wiped his hands on the grass, and that got rid of all the blood. And it was not even really raining, and this was all his excuses. But he had a blue stain on his jacket that was later found to have the same paint used on the walls for the graffiti, the hate racist graffiti that was all over the walls. Was the exact same paint that was on his jacket. They also found the exact same size 7 shoe, which matches the print in his wardrobe, but the box was empty and there were no shoes. Seth's excuse was that his dad sent them to his cousin in the Philippines. Without a box, he just sent 2 pairs of shoes. Like, are you serious? Who the fuck would only send 2 pairs of shoes without a box? That's a load of shit. Absolute load of shit. And a couple of Seth's friends had stated that Seth always had a baseball bat in his car. No matter where he went, there was always a baseball bat. And on the day of the murders, the baseball bat was not in there. It was nowhere to be found. And in fact, none of the murder weapons were ever, like, received. They never were found, ever, the whole time. So by this stage, police were very sus. They did not believe anything that he said, as they had all this evidence, but they had, like, no actual physical evidence to charge him yet. So they asked him to come down to the station and say the night again, and he said it the exact same way, but he had no emotions, not one single cry, not feel bad, absolutely nothing. He just did not care. He had no emotions, straight face. The police also interviewed his friends and family, and they all basically said he was a pathological liar. He told so many stories that they could recount to the police, which weren't true. At one point, he told everybody that he had cancer, then said he beat it like a month and a half later. And his fan page that he made up himself, all about himself. So he made up that fan page that I spoke about at the start, that Daisy girl wasn't real, nobody was in love with him, nobody wanted to marry him, it was all him. All of it. All him. So after his family's death, he gained $15,000 from the government to pay for his now living expenses and their funerals as well. But instead of doing that, he decided to do up his mum's car, which he started driving as soon as they died. He did not give a fuck. He just started driving. He had his own car, everything, but no, he wanted his mum's car to look cool. So he did up his entire mum's car and was just driving it with the money that was meant to pay for their funeral. He also lied to the police and said someone had a hit on his family in the Philippines and he was scared. But there were no business rivals in the Philippines. No one was ordering a death to his family. Nobody cared. Like, so that came to a standstill. He showed police an email that he had received saying he was lucky he wasn't there as they were only paid for three and he was next. And he got his friends to become his bodyguard. Are you kidding me? None of my friends would be my bodyguard. Like, who is this guy? And the police later took his laptop and actually found drafts on his emails. So, like, proving that he sent himself that email. He sent himself an email saying that he was next. So in 2001, in September, he said he was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And he told his auntie, who lived over in the Philippines, who ran his father's investments, and he asked her for $190,000 to pay for brain tumor surgery. She was sus about this whole thing. Like, you have your whole parents' inheritance that you haven't gotten yet, but why am I only hearing about this now and you want all this money? Like, I don't, she didn't understand. She thought it was so sus, so she told the police and gave him no money. In October, he had now sold his parents' cars, his mother's jewelry, and put it all towards a super nice car and got his own personal number plate of TLC, the initials of his family, father's nickname, his mother's nickname, his name, and his sister's. He also moved into a very nice apartment in Chatswood, and everything was paid for by his family as he told them the place that he needed to move because he was in danger. But that was fake as well. So in 2002, in January, Seth was aware the police did not believe his statements or alibi, but he did not know that they were actually, in fact, bugging his phone. So they had his phone bugged. And they also had an undercover cop trying to befriend him. He met this undercover cop in a coffee shop, and this undercover cop was talking to him and basically said, "Hey, I'm part of a gang. I have somebody out of jail that's literally on his deathbed and said he will take your whole family's, like, he will take the guilt for your whole family's murder if you, like, give him money or whatever." And Seth also lied and told the police member that he was part of a gang after the cop said he was. And was actually going to go through with the plan. He drew up a floor plan of his house and pinpointed where his family members died, so where they were lying dead, plus the times of death of his family, but no one knew this apart from the police and the killer, as the information was not out to the public or family members. So this is like, ding, 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 bitch, Seth killed him, motherfuckers. He just literally dropped himself in. But we'll keep going. So the police, with this, gained a pretty close match with his handwriting to the one that was on the wall in the graffiti. He decided not to go forward with this whole idea and plead his innocence. So on the 10th of January 2002, he called one of his mates and told them that his first alibi was all a lie, but the second alibi he had would work. So police confronted him about his alibi because they obviously bugged his phone and heard what he said. And he stated the first one was not true and he was actually at a brothel, but he was embarrassed as his family thought he was a virgin. Apparently, the worker refused his payment as the sex was just too amazing. He was actually, in fact, calling brothels and taxi drivers, but the police obviously knew that. And they called the taxi driver that he had called. And the taxi driver had said that he picked him up and they told him it was in relation to a triple homicide. Then suddenly, all the truth came out. This taxi driver, the poor man, was like, he told me it was for a misdemeanor. If I knew it was anything about this, I would never have gone ahead with it. He told me it was just for like a little juvie thing, like, what the hell? And he said, I actually never picked him up. He asked me to lie for him. And they did the exact same thing to the brothels. And the sex worker that he had stated he slept with wasn't even working on the 10th of July. She wasn't even working there. He paid both of them $50 to do this. She was literally paying people to lie for him. So on the 30th of May, Seth said there was a break-in at his apartment and he got in two threatening emails. Confess now or your father deserved to die. Don't talk to any reporters. There were no evidence of a break-in in his house and the emails were tracked back to a cafe with no surveillance. So the police thought straight away, it's obviously Seth. Like, he's done it before. Why the fuck would he not do it now? We know when he knows we're on his trail, like everything. Seth decided to do a free interview with the Daily Telegraph saying his apartment had been broken into and he believed his parents' killers were the reason for it. At 8:30 p.m. the night of the interview, he was found in a gutter in Chatswood with a plastic bag next to him and was taken to hospital. He told doctors he didn't even know his own name and he was all like, he couldn't see, he didn't know where he was, like this whole situation. He made this massive fucking thing about it. When the police arrived, he said somebody grabbed him into a car and put a plastic bag over his head and hit him with a piece of wood. They told him to withdraw the money and to quit talking to reporters. If he didn't, there were going to be consequences and his grandmother would die. Doctors told police there was no indications he was hit in the head at all. And the police were worried he was lying about it all, but because his grandmother had been threatened, they were so worried that he was going to go and hurt her just to prove, like, his point to the cops. So on the 13th of June 2002, police searched his apartment and charged him for his family's murders. He was refused bail and tried to get his inheritance to pay for this, but they obviously said no, because like you murdered your family. In the trial, it came out Seth had been planning this murder for months and wasn't originally going to poison them all. Other laptop he left at his family home, looked into his search history and found that he was looking up all these poisons that could be easily hidden in food. Seth denied it all and said his dad was searching, like searching stuff so that he didn't kill his plants in the garden. Fucking load of shit. Like, what the fuck? Just go to a garden shop. This kid's an actual idiot. Like, even I could come up with better excuses. So the police found a clear liquid also under his desk in the family home, and it came back that it was deadly if it was consumed. So days before the deaths, Seth's mother actually went into hospital with abdominal pains, and she stated it must have just been food poisoning. And Seth covered it up, saying that he felt sick as well, and he must have had the exact same thing, when in fact, Seth was trying to kill his mum with the food. Seth wasn't sick at all, but his mum didn't die from it, so he murdered them by stabbing them. He was also charged with a threatening product contamination. The day of the murders, what actually happened was Seth went to uni in the morning, then went to his father's law firm, and left around 4:10. He went home. When he got home, he grabbed a knife and the baseball bat. He went and brutally murdered his sister. And the reason why his sister's death was the worst was because he was pissed off with her that she told his parents that he made fake reports at the university. He literally murdered his sister in such a terrible way, or because she told his parents that he was lying about university. And he didn't even lose anything from it. He still had his car, he still had his inheritance. So why is he so pissed off? Anyway, he waited for his mother to get home. And the reason why he put the jacket over his sister was so he didn't have to look at her. And he waited for his mother to get home at 6 p.m. And then he attacked her and stabbed her when she got into the living room. He then sat there and waited for his dad to walk in the door at 7 p.m. and murdered his father as soon as he walked in. And it was actually, in fact, Seth that his auntie saw standing there. Like, it wasn't a freaking nothing. It was Seth. So this whole thing could have been stopped. But anyway, the son wanted to say it was all fake. Anyway. So after the murders, Seth went and had a shower and staged the entire scene to make it look like a racial crime. The police later were able to have an exact match of the paint that was found on his jumper to match the exact one on the walls, which just proved his guilty even further. He then left with all the evidence and disposed of them all and went straight to his friend Sam's house. Who the fuck murders their entire family, has a shower with them laying downstairs, and then goes straight over to their best friend's house? I'm sorry. Safe, I did that. And my friend Ange found out I killed my fucking family. She would literally be like, fuck. Like, she would, like, murder me herself, the fact that I went straight to her after. Like, I cannot even, like, think of that. How did you not, like, how were you not, like, sick? How were you not vomiting the whole situation? You went and ate food and then went to an arcade. How? What the fuck? Anyway, this is so fucked up. On the 20th of May 2004, Seth was found guilty of 3 counts of murder, which he actually didn't expect to be convicted of. He full-on thought that they believed he was not guilty after the countless lies, the countless, like, freaking everything. He literally proved he was guilty. Like, at the start of the whole scene, you would have known that it was Seth out of all people. Like, I could have gone 2 minutes into this podcast and been like, yes, Seth. Like, are you kidding? Anyway. So they actually had him checked by a psychiatrist. He seemed mentally stable, so he went in with everybody else in jail. He was mentally stable and murdered his entire family and then went to dinner and went out with his friend Sam. I feel bad for his friend. Like, imagine. So on the 18th of September 2004, he was sentenced to 3 life sentences without parole. And that's that. He went to jail and he's still in there. And, yeah, so this poor family was murdered. And honestly, it was sad. Like, I couldn't imagine having that, like, mentality all about inheritance. Like, I love my family, no matter how much they piss me off. But I could never imagine murdering them over inheritance or murdering them at all. But, like, over something so idiotic and stupid and brutally murdering my sister or my brother because they done me in for something. Like, of course I want to hit them when they done me in for something, but I'm not going to go and fucking kill them. Oh, I'm so glad that I have such a great relationship with my family that I don't have to think like that. And if any of you do, please don't kill your family. So, yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. Bye.